Basically, it's Southwest Asian, North Africans, Arab American heritage is another. Other people say MENA, which is Middle East, North Africa, but you get the point of what this particular group. And this group is could be Christian, Druze, Muslims, Jews. We are not a monolithic community, but there are things that we share. And a lot of what we're sharing right now is a lot of grief. I'm grieving, my friends. Like, I'm grieving. Like, yes, I'm here with my back straight and I'm standing up for what I believe in and who I am, but I'm hurt. I feel harmed in this world. I want to know why. I get to sit every day and watch video after video after video of blown up bodies of mothers crying over their children, and then I'm the one that's controversial. It really is something. And there's a root cause here, my friends. Sometimes we have to question the things that we believe. What makes me controversial? It really is because I'm Palestinian. That's part of it. And it's also because I have the audacity to speak up, and I'm going to tell you why. My Palestinian immigrant parents chose to immigrate to this country. That's a choice that my parents made. My parents did not want to raise their children under a military occupation. And for any of you who are in this room who are parents yourselves, or those of you who even know your own parents, I'm sure many of you would agree that your parents would do anything for you and sacrifice everything for you. And so that's what my parents did. They left their parents in Palestine. They left their grandparents, their siblings, their neighborhoods, everything that they loved, because they rejected the idea that they were going to bear children under a military occupation. So when my father had the opportunity to immigrate in the land of the free, right? In the land where we apparently could be whoever we wanted and worship the way we wanted, my father said, "That's where I'm taking my children." He could have went anywhere else. He could have went to a different Arab country. He could have went to Kuwait, he could have went to Lebanon, he could have went to Iraq, he could have went anywhere. But no, my dad said, "I'm going to this place called the United States of America, because that's where I know my children will thrive and get the types of things that we would never imagine getting under a military occupation in Palestine." So when you ask yourself, why is Linda Sarsour this way? It's because I'm going to make my parents' sacrifices and journey to this country worth it. That's why. I am going to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and great-grandparents who gave up those that they loved so that they could come to this new land and get the opportunities so that we can look back. Because remember, right? Sankofa. You got to look back, my friends. A lot of us here are either immigrants or children of immigrants or great-grandchildren of immigrants, or can trace our ancestry back, even if you're tracing it back to enslaved African people. People sacrificed for us to be here. Every privilege that you engage in today, whether you have voting rights, whether you are engaging in access to healthcare, reproductive healthcare, there's so many things, even access to higher education. Somebody sacrificed for you. My parents don't have college degrees. My father has a fifth-grade education. My mother also didn't finish high school. She actually was in her last year of high school when they started arresting people in Palestine, and my grandfather had to pull her out of school because he said that if they get arrested, they would have to pay a 5,000 shekel kind of like bail. And my grandfather whispered to my mother and said, "Listen, if that happens, we can't afford it, my we can't. I can't have you in that situation." So when my mother only had 5 months left of school to finish, she dropped out of high school. And so everything that I do, everything that I strive for is to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. And I hope that you, as you're accessing higher education, as you are trying to be the best that you can be, you are honoring the sacrifices of people that came before you. And I wouldn't be an organizer if I didn't tell you to do some things. You know, we were talking right now about democracy. My friends, we are in trouble in this country. And I keep telling people all politics is local. And we have a lot of apathy in this country. A lot of people say, "Oh, I don't voting." Let me tell you about voting for me. Voting is sacrilegious to me. Something, it means a lot to me. It's not about the people you're voting for. It's about the act. You know, when I go to the polls to vote, you might think this is deep, but this is how I think. two thoughts when I'm walking to a polling site. One is, somebody shed blood for me to do this. And I'm every step I take into a polling site, I am honoring the sacrifices of those before me that gave me the opportunity to participate in this democracy. So that's the first thought that I have. The second thought that I have is, it ain't about me. It ain't about you all the time. Because a lot of time people in this country participate in democracy from a very self-righteous place. You know why? Because the United States culture teaches you to be self-righteous. It teaches you individualism. I don't come from a culture of individualism. I come from it takes a village. I come from community. So when I go to the polls and I look at, I say to myself, I don't like any of these people. That's what I say. That's the first thought I get. But then I go to my second thought, which is a question that I ask myself. Which one of these people is going to be the least harmful to marginalized people in this country? That's what I ask myself, because it ain't about me. I might be just fine. Some of you might be just fine, but there are other people that are not going to be fine. And it is our responsibility to, at least if we are in the privilege and place and role, to reduce harm or alleviate some harm, even if it's a little harm, you better believe I'm going to do whatever it takes to alleviate some harm if I have a role that I can play in it. So participate. There are incredible people in your communities that are running for office. Oftentimes, when we see a candidate who's a person of color or who's a member of a marginalized community, you know what we think? They always say, oh, they don't got a chance. Why? If we don't believe in us, who's supposed to believe in us? Support people that you are aligned with. Vote for people. Don't worry if they got a chance or not. Because if everybody that worried they didn't have a chance actually voted, they might actually have a chance. But we're too busy talking instead of doing the actual work to build leaders in our community and to ensure that they are providing the right representation for our people.
You're listening to Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
All politics is local. Some of the most harmful pieces of legislation that are happening across this country are not happening actually in Washington, D.C. They're happening in your state legislators across this country. Repro rights, anti-LGBTQ laws, anti-healthcare, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, they're all happening in your state legislature. So you gotta get up and go to the polls for 5 minutes. And for those of you who remember the days of the Arab Spring, some of you were very young. That was a time where the people were fighting for democracy in the Middle East. It didn't work out for pretty much all of them. But they believed in it. And guess what they were willing to do? They were willing to stand up to snipers. Just so that they could have the right that you have here to just walk into a polling site with nothing. You don't got to worry. You just walk into the polling site. These people were willing to stand up to snipers and to autocratic regimes just so that they can have the right that you have here. So I honor those people too. Participate and support local organizations. In this area, there are organizations that are doing incredible work. There are people in this room actually who work in Palestinian solidarity. There are people here that are working with at-risk youth. There are people here who work at food pantries and know that there's a homeless population here. There's so much incredible work that's happening in the local community. And stop making excuses. I'm so busy, Linda, I study, I got papers to do. I know you do. Trust me, I was where you were 25 years ago. But you gotta have at least an hour or two, my friends. You gotta put your beliefs in practice. And I always tell people all the time, I don't like when people say I'm an activist, because I'm not an activist. An activist for me is an individual who believes in something and shows up at the right place at the right time in places that align with their values. An organizer is someone that actually deeply participates and organizes other people to also join along. So get up, participate in an organization, join, be a member of an organization that does something that you believe in. They're around, my friends. They're not hard to find, even in an area like this one. The other thing I will say is that we have this idea, somebody told us, that we don't got it. We're always believed that the opposition has more than us, that we can't compete with the opposition, people who oppose our values. And so college students will say, Linda, I hope you're not getting to the part about the money because I got no money. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. All of you, every once in a while, get yourself a nice cup of coffee, go out to lunch with a friend, maybe go out to dinner with a friend. We all have a little bit of that. I always say to people every once in a while, in order to really be and feel purposeful, you got to put your money where your mouth is. So that could mean $10 a month that you find a local organization that does something that you truly believe in, and you say, every month I'm going to put $10 on an organization that's working on something that I believe deeply in my heart. Because that type of consistent behavior, the reason why I say $10 a month, because this ain't the I drop it and feel good. It's something that is a part of who you are. This is what you do. This is what your commitment is towards. And that type of consistency, if we had it all over this country and a whole lot of people just did a little something, we would really be in a better place, my friends. So think about that. What organization means something to you that you can give $10 towards every single month? I don't know about folks in this room. I'm old. And I know I'm very grateful. I come from a family with some good genes, my friends. My mom looks fabulous for her age. She, you know, and I actually got my good genes from my mom's side. My dad was like gray-haired when he was like 25. But I came out like my mom's side of the family. I grew up in the age of, remember the computers that were the box computer? Like, I was still around at that time. I was dial-up AOL days. I was around. So I'm one of those generations that straddles like the iPhone, Apple, Mac, but I also had those types of computers and I had dial-up internet. So I lived at a time where we didn't have cell phones. I got a cell phone when I was like 25 or something. So I'm one of those. And the reason why I bring that up is because now we find ourselves in the digital age. We communicate through DMs. We look at screens all day long. The reason why I'm not an activist and I'm an organizer because I like people. I like to be outside. So most of the time when you see me, I'm outside. I'm not a social media influencer. Find me on a street corner. I will register you to vote. I will be the lady that knocks on your door. That's what I do. People think I'm wild that during election season, I'm excited about knocking on people's doors. Because actually, it's amazing to be with real human beings and knock on people's door. And let me tell you, they open the door for me because they're like, what is this lady doing outside my door? I'm an interesting person. And I don't mean that they even know who I am. Just look, you knock and people look out the window and say, what's this Muslim lady doing outside my house? It's very curious. The curiosity kills the cat. And I get a lot of door opens, which is why a lot of people love when I work on their campaigns, because I got a lot of open doors. My point is, get to know one another. I'm tired of this. And I saw this on this college campus too. You already know what I'm talking about. You walk in the hallway, you don't even know who's walking around you. Sometimes put your phone down for a minute. Sometimes when you walk into your classroom, look around and say, damn, I've been sitting for 3 weeks next to people right here. I never even asked these people what their names are. In your own class, there are people that will tell me, I asked somebody today. They said, you're right. Before you leave here today, go up to somebody and say, you know, I've seen you around this college campus, but I never actually asked your name. My name is so-and-so. What's your name? This is the kind of world that I want to live in. Because people will say things, and we've been in, you've heard this mantra before. It's something that we say often in part of Black Lives Matter type spaces, racial justice spaces, where they say things like, we must love and protect one another. How are you supposed to protect me if you don't know me? I want to live in a world where you know your neighbors. There are people right now that will tell you, I've lived on the street for about 10 years. You're right, Linda. I'm thinking about it. I'm visualizing it. I only know like one family on my block. Why? Someday you might need somebody, right? Being able to live. Community requires you to know the people that are around you. That's the point of community. And there's something about this digital age that has stopped that. And the polarization that we're feeling today in this country, some of it has to do with the digital era. Of course, the misinformation and disinformation on the internet. But also there's this lack of people just being human and being like, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? I saw, oh, is that your dog? How cute. Like regular, like human being things. Just so you all know, I am that lady. That is me. When I moved to a new house about 3 years ago. And my children who are basically in your age group. My son's going to be 25 in June. I have a 23-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old daughter. The first day that we moved into our house, you know what I did? I knocked on every door in my block. I said, just want you to know hello. I'm your new neighbor. I live right there on the corner. And even my neighbors thought I was crazy. Because that's just not a thing people do apparently anymore. But you know what? I'm going to tell you this last story about the importance of neighbors. About 9 days after the horrific attacks of October 7th, a man drove his car into my house. I have the video on my phone for anybody who wants to see it. And, you know, I was shook up, you know. And thank God it was just, they just basically crashed into the front of my staircase, then proceeded on my very tiny lawn, because, you know, we don't really have lawns in New York. And then immediately crashed into my car, Nissan Pathfinder. The whole side of the car was totaled. And, you know, do the usual thing people do. You call the cops, whatever. I just got to the house. I didn't have no security cameras. I got nothing. And because I had already met my neighbors, my friends, I have a neighbor who lives across the street from my house who I know for a fact is not aligned with me on a lot of political things. Why? Because he straight has a Trump 2024 sign right outside his house. But he saw the police and came running over to me. He said, what happened? I said, this is what happened, my friend. Look at this. He said, I'll be right back. This man has a state-of-the-art surveillance system outside of his house. He was so proud of himself that it finally came to good use. And he was so, had his back straight. The cops were there. He told the cops, he said, how do you want me to give it to you? Showing it to them on his phone. It was crisp, clear, got the license plate number, everything. And he was like, you want me to go inside? I'll put it on a USB, whatever. And I'm just, and I really, like, I'm not going to lie to you, for 1 minute in my life, I looked at this person, I said, that's my neighbor right there. I promise you, if me and him got into a deep conversation, we probably would be arguing in the middle of my street. But in that moment, he was my neighbor. And I knocked on his door. And I had a whole conversation with him for like 15 minutes while my children were looking at me from across the street like, we don't know that lady. She's not related to us. So get to know one another. I promise you, one of the most powerful things that has kept me up and kept me going amongst all the things that I have experienced in my life, in my semi-short, long life that I had, is people. It's people. It's deep. I got deep relationships with people. And guess what? I built some right here at the school. The minute I leave the school, my friends, I got friends here. I got people who I could call, people I could share with, right? Human beings. This is not just people who invite me to your school because, and that's it, and I just never know them ever again. I'm still connected to people in every campus in this country that has ever invited me. They are my people. I remember them. Sometimes I'm like, oh, something happened in like this state. I text people and I say, are you okay? I heard this happen. Just happened the other day. I was at, you know, St. Mary's is in Maryland, and I was like, are you cool? Everybody's cool there after the horrific, you know, bridge situation. They were like, no, we're good. People are like, sometimes people get caught off guard that you even like, what do you mean? This, out of all the people in the world, you're texting me, asking me, us, how we're doing. And that's the kind of world that I want to live in. So I just want to say thank you for this courageous invitation. And I feel sad saying that bringing someone like me to your school is courageous, but it is in this context. Thank you for every single person who did not know me, who fought for me to be here. Thank you for those of you who decided to show up tonight when you could have been anywhere else. And I want to again say, again, because I want people to know that I have deep admiration and appreciation for people who do their jobs with love. Why do I need this drama in my life? I don't get paid that much. Seriously. They could have moved on. But they made this happen because they knew that it wasn't just about me. It was about the reason why we're all here today. So I hope that our Arab and Swana students feel loved today. That there were people fighting for you on this campus. This event is about hoping that you left here feeling seen, feeling loved, and knowing who your allies are. And guess what? You got plenty of them on this college campus. Plenty of them. So anyway, thank you for having me. Please welcome my beautiful friends, Jasmine and Belkis. Give it up.
Thank you so much for being here today. We're so grateful that you are joining us in the midst of so much grief and your ability to still show up so unapologetically. How can staff, faculty, and students support Palestinian students and other students participating in activism during this time?
I'm just gonna go back to the theme, my friends. I'm gonna feed you what you're feeding in the school. Democracy requires the active participation of everyone who wants to be involved. And democracy is not about one issue or two or 10 or 20, it's about every issue. So there are students on this college campus that feel very strongly during a critical moment in history where there's an active genocide happening. The least that the school can do is allow these students to organize, to have conversations, to put forth their ideas, their solutions, build relationships together, and use this campus as a way to also educate, because not everybody understands what's happening. And so democracy requires that institutions, right, cultivate those spaces, right? Because students have only some power. And so we have to understand the dynamics of power in a university. And so I'm saying just give them space. I'm not saying agree with them. I'm not saying that take their position. I'm saying give them the space to be their full and unapologetic selves, because that is how students are going to academically achieve. When they are at a university that sees them, gives them space to be themselves, and allows them to speak of their pain, of their trauma, but also of their joys. And this is an event where we should never have been in a space of anxiety or kids worrying about whether this event was gonna happen. This was supposed to be a day of celebration. You were all supposed to come here today and be like, yay, we love our SWANA and Arab American students. But then we had to go on this journey that reaffirmed what the students were already feeling, which is being unheard, unseen, and oftentimes also feeling further marginalized than they already were before even this last 6 months. So that's all I'm saying, just give them space. And that is something that you, in fact, as a university, that is your job, because these students, whether or not they're on financial aid or have scholarships or pay out of pocket, that's part of the deal, my friends, just so we're all clear. You don't just come to a university just to get a degree. You come to have amenities available to you, rooms available to you, services, staff, support staff, who are supposed to allow you to explore your identity, explore who you are and what you believe. And the way that you also do that is by inviting speakers to the school. Let me be clear about what kind of speakers, because some of you might learn some things later after this event. I'm not gonna put it out there here. I believe in academic freedom, and I believe in free speech, and I believe in the right that the school has to bring anybody who believes anything to the school, but there gotta be a line drawn. There's one line that I have, and I said this at CU when some of you were there. The line that has to be drawn is that no speaker should be allowed in a school that takes a position that a certain group of people should not exist. If that's your position, then you're not welcome on a college campus. But if you have different ideas about racial justice, policing, you're not immigration, I don't even care what your position is. If there's students that want to listen to that, they should have that opportunity to listen. But if there's a speaker that literally campaigns against the right to exist of a particular group of people, they should not be welcomed on college campus.
Yes. Mike. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for that insightful answer. And we have so many more questions. You left us with so many great nuggets, but unfortunately we are getting close to that time, and I want to respect everyone's time here and your time here as well. So again, I just want to say thank you so much for the information that you shared, and thank you so much for our little small conversation.
We might have one more.
Okay. So I had the pleasure, along with a couple of people in this room as well, had the pleasure to see your speech at Boulder. So thank you for sharing there as well. And a question that kind of came up was, how do you navigate and take care of yourself through community care when you're faced with obstacles like social justice, battle fatigue, Islamophobia, and misinformation? And how do you know when to take a step back?
I love that. That's actually a great question to end on. So for folks who are in that Boulder, I'm going to give you context to this question because this is an important context. Oftentimes when people see organizers, student organizers, or you see activists in your community, you always say this thing to them, like, you need self-care. Like, take care of yourself, right? A lot of people say that, like, chill, take care, find something that, you know, to take care of yourself. And so what I want to explain to people about that is that while you may be well-intentioned, that's actually not a thing you say to activists and organizers. And I'm going to tell you why. Because if your intention is to say to this activist or organizer that you're overwhelmed, that you're doing too much, that you look exhausted and you look tired, you're now giving them another burden by telling them, now go organize something to make yourself feel better. So the reason why I have changed that perspective is I believe in this thing called community care. So if you have a student organizer, or maybe it's a faculty, or maybe it's a activist or organizer in your community that's been nonstop, instead of saying to them, do something for yourself, why don't you do something for them? Right? Why don't you say to them, you know what? And I'll give some examples. This is nothing like, you don't got to get too wild here, my friends, right? Like, let's say there's an organizer in your community who has children. If there's any night where I can watch your children, so you can just go out and have a nice, you know, time, go out with your friends for dinner, or just go somewhere and be by yourself, I got you. I know you're out every night organizing in the community. Can I bring dinner to your family? A few of us want to either buy some dinner or make some dinner for your family. Or maybe a few of you get together, if you can, and say, maybe a massage locally is like, I don't know, I'm just making this up, $70. And then a group of you come together and each of you puts in $5 and you give somebody a gift certificate. And you say, you know, you need a massage. Force them into a place where they have to be by themselves and be taken care of. A manicure. I don't know. These are just little things. Like, people sometimes underestimate the little things that we could do for people, right? Showing up somewhere and say, I got you on a cup of coffee. And sometimes it's even as simple as sending somebody a text message and saying, I see you. I know this work is hard. I hope you feel appreciated. I know that this work is selfless, because a lot of times it's a lot of these people, there's people in this room that have been organizing here around ceasefire in this area. They're doing it for free, my friends. This free work. At some point, you might want to say, I got you. Buy somebody a little book, a notebook, something. These gestures, sometimes you have no idea how much they mean to somebody. And so we're going to move in this world from this idea of self-care. And that doesn't mean that you don't get to do good, great things for yourself. But in the context of our community work, we have to come out of a different mindset to say to people, I'm willing to do something for you. And that way you show people that not only are you willing to help take care of them in that moment, but it's a different kind of acknowledgement of the work that they are doing. Because I'm not going to lie to you, sometimes I ask myself, you know, we're all human beings, my friends. Sometimes I'm like, do people see what we try to do outside over here? Do people see what's going on? And I think sometimes when I get, like, I got a beautiful gift from some friends here, and it meant the world to me. It really did. I was overwhelmed. I literally got a package in the mail, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And it was the most thoughtful thing. They bought me, you're not going to believe this, something called Gifted Root. And it's a company in the United States of America that, I don't know if this might not be the right agricultural term, so excuse me. So I'm going to use an animal term. They breed olive trees. And they breed specific olive trees, not just any old olive tree. Their olive trees are birthed from the oldest olive trees in the world, which are in the hills of Lebanon. And so this gift, to show you the simplicity sometimes of things that we do for others, this is a gift that I know, as if you know anything about olive trees, they will live for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And so while I'm long, long, long gone on this earth, when my great, great, great grandchildren are long gone on this earth, that olive tree is still going to grow. Because that's what olive trees do. They are so deeply rooted that they will live and live and live almost perpetually. And so again, that might not be a thought that occurred to somebody, but it was the most meaningful gift that I have ever received in the last 25 years. And I've gotten some good gifts, my friends. But that was the best gift that I ever got. So no more self-care, community care.
Awesome. You were just listening to Linda Sarsour, a Palestinian American Speaks. She spoke at Colorado State University in Fort Collins in early April 2024. Linda Sarsour is a community organizer and racial justice activist. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent, unembedded nonprofit in our 38th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Rami Khoury, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Chris Hedges, Arundhati Roy, and Noam Chomsky. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks, and for the classic Edward Said book, The Pen and the Sword, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Rola Azar, performing Palestine Lives.
دق الرمح بعود الزي
هي فلسطين
وانتو يا ناشام مني
هي هي فلسطين
دق الرمح بعود الزي
هي هي فلسطين
وانتو يا ناشام مني واحنا شبابك فلسطين
هي هي فلسطين
واني عم واني عمتي اطلع يا قمرنا وهل
هي هي فلسطين
وضوي الكرة الأرضية
هي هي فلسطين
ما خلقنا تنعيش بذل
هي هي فلسطين
وخلقنا نعيش بحرية
هي هي فلسطين
حرية حرية
هي هي فلسطين
خلقنا نعيش بحرية
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. This is Stress Analysis. We're listening to a fun assortment of softer synth pop today, some chill folk tunes. Stay tuned. Before that, WRCT is supported by Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full coffee bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches, breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to eat, study, eat, and hang out with friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. All right, next up, we're going to hear You're Dead by Norma Tanaga and Morabiasa by Kebby Bloom from Music from Saharan Cell Phones.
Teach you to be free. She said, no. no. She said, no, no, no. And the devil said,
Cabablo, Balti, Machas.
Muribayasa, Kumi Malila, Ainan Kadom.
Muribayasa,
Life Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Dada Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Dambe Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Muribayasa, Kumi Malila, Ainan Kadom.
Muribayasa,
Life Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Dada Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Dambe Falidom.
Muribayasa,
Belauli Kuidogo Muribayasa, Chongoro Bai Dogo Muribayasa, Usoro Bai Dogo Muribayasa, Family Need Dogo Muribayasa, Suru Need Dogo Muribayasa, Lay Do Tiki Dogo Muribayasa, Lay Do Fali Dogo Muribayasa, Suru Saranta Uta Don Tugodo, Family Saran.
bam 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 bari
Dites-moi d'où il vient, enfin je saurai où je vais. Maman dit que lorsqu'on cherche bien, on finit toujours par trouver. Elle dit qu'il n'est jamais très loin, qu'il part très souvent travailler. Maman dit travailler c'est bien, bien mieux qu'être mal accompagné. Pas vrai, où est ton papa? Dis-moi où est ton papa? Sans même devoir lui parler, c'est ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché? Ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es, 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 où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Qu'on y croit ou pas, y aura bien un jour où on n'y croira plus. Un jour ou l'autre, on sera tous papa, et d'un jour à l'autre, on aura disparu. Serons-nous détestables? Serons-nous admirables? Des géniteurs ou des génies? Dites-nous qui donne naissance aux irresponsables, hein? Dites-nous qui? Tiens, tout le monde sait comment on fait des bébés, mais personne sait comment on fait des papas. Monsieur, je sais d'où on aurait hérité, c'est ça, faut le sucer de son pouce ou quoi? Dites-nous où c'est caché, ça doit faire au moins mille fois qu'on a bouffé nos doigts. Hey! Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Papa, dis-moi où est ton papa, sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché, ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey, où est ton papa, dis-moi où est ton papa, sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché, ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es, 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 papa, où t'es? Où t'es
That was Papa Toi by Stromae. Before that, Cabo Lang by Abel Slakwe. Next up, Kano Danyen by Fatoma Dara and Sneebog by Dang Fever. If you're liking what you're hearing so far, there are a lot of other shows you can listen to here at WRCT. All Things Folk is dedicated to traditional and contemporary folk music, acoustic blues, and Americana covering North America. Tune in Sundays, 2 to 5 p.m. on WRCT Pittsburgh. Also, Lavender Hour, music you can dye your hair and your bathroom purple to, Thursdays at 5 p.m.